Portland is like such a baby. I mean, a baby about snow that, well, if we get like an inch overnight, schools will be canceled tomorrow, and it's just ridiculous.
Oh, Portland.
I know. We don't know how to do snow like you guys do.
I wish I didn't know how to do snow. We could just stop doing it. Everyone's like, hey, where's the snow? I don't know. We forgot how to do it. That'd be great. Gotta erase the recipe.
You are likely to be eaten.
You are likely to be eaten by a group. If this predicament seems particularly cruel, consider whose fault it could be. Now the torture of a match in your inventory. You are likely to be eaten by a group. If this predicament seems particularly cruel, consider whose fault it could be. Now the torture of a match in your inventory.
All right, so I think, Carrington, you picked this game because you thought it... I don't remember exactly how you worded it, but you said like it didn't sound interesting to you, or it always sounded boring or something like that.
Both of those are true things. I feel I was uninterested because it looked boring.
Were you right?
I was not right. I think we can safely say that all of the Infocom games will be interesting. This is one of the ones where I thought, nope, not for me. But I would not say it was boring.
Okay. I disagree with you.
You think it was boring?
It was
for the
a bad
10
game.
Minutes it took you to finish it?
This was a bad game, and I want my 10 minutes back.
See, I'm not saying that I think it's a good one. I'm just saying I didn't think it was boring, which is what I went in thinking this will be dull. And I don't think it was dull. I think it was gee golly willikers kind of exciting, but not dull.
Okay. See what you're saying?
So we have, to backtrack a bit here, I think no feedback.
Right, well, because we just recorded the last episode like 10 minutes ago.
Right, so I thought maybe we should explain to listeners, it's not that they don't love us anymore, although maybe they don't love us anymore.
That's quite possible.
totally separate issue.
So over us.
But we're just over them. We recorded the last one on like Saturday night, and it got published midday Sunday, and by the time that episode was out, you had already completed Sea Stalker. Oh, but why? Yes. But wait, we're talking about Sea Stalker, I guess. Sea Stalker. By the time we mentioned what we're talking about.
Sea Stalker is a game made by Infocom. Yes.
It is. Mm-hmm. And then you said, hey, I'm already done. Can I move on to the next one? So this is also the first time we're recording where we already know what the next game will be. Ooh, it's
That's
exciting.
True. It is exciting. Should
this
we say
like
it?
A game of firsts.
We could do it like, we could say pre-fence, pre-magic spoiler fence. I'm not sure we need a spoiler fence.
It's now a magic spoiler fence. Oh, no, I've got a couple of things. There'll be a fence.
Okay.
I got things I want to talk about that I think would wreck it for people if they play.
Oh, you wouldn't want to wreck this fantastic game.
I am not nearly as down on this game as you are. Apparently.
Best thing about this game is the box art.
So looking through my interaction with the rest of the world, I have one teeny thing of feedback we got that sort of not about this game or the last game, but just about games in general. Listener Yulia taught me a new word on Twitter, a new word about Infocom that I had not known before. So you must know about feelies. We've talked about the feelies before. So sure. Inside the gray boxes, like the not the fancy early Infocom packaging, but the standard boxes that came out, there would be like a reclosable tray section. Like these boxes open like a book, and there's that little tray section. So the stuff in the tray, all those little bits and bobs that come with the game, those are the feelies. Right. And I have usually referred to that the booklet kind of that's attached to the box as one of the feelies, but that's actually called the browsy, it turns out. There's a browsy and there's feelies.
Oh, I did not know that.
Me neither.
And sometimes my browser crashes and I have to reboot it.
Exactly. So this was total news to me. And I bet you a lot of people who are more familiar with Infocom games than us already knew this, but it was completely new to me. So thank you, Yulia. And then when I started looking at lists
than feelings.
Oh my goodness. When I started looking at lists of the contents and the things that come with the games, they're usually numbered B1, 2, 3, like when it lists all the feelies. And the first thing will be B, because that is the browsy, the attached booklet.
Hmm.
So I've got a new vocab.
Nice. Excellent. My only feedback or whatever since we last recorded 15 minutes ago was in the last time we talked, someone had recommended a podcast called...
Was it ours?
Not ours. They said, no, the Clash of the Type-Ins podcast.
I remember. Such a good name. Such a good name.
It is. I started listening to... I've listened to an episode and a half now, and I am loving it.
Now, that's the one where they get the author of the interactive fiction to actually read the responses?
Yes.
Oh, that's exactly. That's a great premise.
And,
oh,
and I jumped into...
We should stop doing our podcast and just listen to that one.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Bye. No. I jumped into the episode on Violet, which is a two-part episode, and I played Violet a few years ago, and I loved it, so I kind of wanted to start with one that I was familiar with, and I'm just very much enjoying it. So if our every two-day publishing schedule is not enough for you, go listen to... that one.
This will not be an every 2 day thing going forward. Just coincidentally, no. We seem to have picked, because we should say it's because this game Sea Stalker was the a junior game, which I think they later called introductory. So it's one of the easier ones, yes. Specifically aimed at people who are new to it, maybe younger players, that sort of thing. So and I too completed it fairly quickly, though not nearly as quickly as you.
Yeah, this was their one and only junior level game, and later I think they rebranded it as introductory, and so junior level games were supposed to be for preteens, and then introductory was not necessarily for teens, but was supposed to be for adults who are new to interactive fiction. So they later rebranded this as, oh, all of a sudden it's an adult game, and then had some other... I don't mean an adult game. I just mean a game that's not for children, and had other introductory games for non-children. And yet, I felt like they hired this guy to write it who was like a famous or a well-known children's book writer, and he'd done all like a bunch of Tom Swift books, and I don't know. Nancy Drew and that sort of thing, and yet this game doesn't do it. I don't feel like it does a service to children, especially kids who were new to interactive fiction and excited by it. I think they might play this game and go, wow, interactive fiction's not for me, I'm going to pick up a book or go play Missile Command or something like that.
Oh, Missile Command. So that guy was Jim Lawrence, who I guess was the writer of this, but not the implementer, right. Who was somebody else. Who was the programmer
guy? Stu Galley.
Oh, Stu Galley. Okay, so he's the Infocom guy, and then Jim Lawrence gets hired to be sort of the plot fellow. And yes. I have, over the last day, I guess, gone down a Jim Lawrence rabbit hole that is crazy fascinating. He's a super interesting guy, and that is the best thing that came out of this game, frankly, because I don't think it's a great game, but he was crazy interesting. So like you say, he was a ghostwriter for like lots of series, like Hardy Boys and Nancy Drew and the Tom Swift and Tom Swift Jr. stuff. But he's one of those guys who would write often under a shared pseudonym. So the book wouldn't have his name on it. Like if it's Hardy Boys, he's Franklin W. Dixon, because that is supposedly the guy who writes them all. And then there was like the Christopher Cool series that are all written by Jack Lancer. So Jim Lawrence gets brought in to be, hey, like you're familiar with writing kids stuff, so let's make a kids type thing. In fact, this was supposed to be a Tom Swift story, but when Infocom went to the Tom Swift publisher and said, hey, let's make a Tom Swift book, they wanted like way too much money. So I said, well, let's just change the name, still make it a Tom Swift story, we just won't pay any royalties and we won't just use the actual Tom Swift name.
Right. In fact, when you start the game, you get to enter your own name, and it injects your name into the title of the game.
And I will admit that I played the second time as me. In fact, I had to play this twice because I got a pretty far way into it using Zoom again, and then Zoom crashed on me. Annoyingly, and so then I had to restart the game, and it just, my last few saves were all, I guess, corrupted or something, and I just restarted from the beginning. But second time playing through, when I was successful, I entered my name as Kevin Savitz. So technically, you've beat this game twice.
Oh, excellent!
Yes, we both played.
Did you play with Zoom again the second time, or did you?
Yes, I did. I went back in to see if it was something specific to the game, because then I thought I could warn listeners, hey, don't play this with Zoom. Nope, play perfectly the second time through. So. I don't know.
Interesting. I played. I went looking for a .z file so that I could try Zoom. And the thing that I found ran into first was the Apple II version. So that I ended up playing in an Apple II emulator. I played the Apple version. I played as my name was Gracie Fublitsky.
Nice. I get the Fublitsky reference.
So
that's an Infocom thing.
That's an Infocom.
Just saying.
Yeah.
Oh, anyway, in fact, I want to get back to the Apple thing, because we should also talk about something else about those disk images. But Jim Lawrence, or James Duncan Lawrence, this author guy, just to sort of give him his due, well, he wrote tons of those Tom Swift type books and lots of other series and old time radio stuff. He was a big old time radio writer, and the James Bond comic strip he did, and he did like the AI gang, a bunch of books about five wacky kids who are like masters of robots and artificial intelligence. But he also wrote things like the Man from Planet X series, which was 1970s pulp sci-fi erotica. Like, he wrote like things all over the place, not just kids books. And he both wrote and created the Friday Foster comic strip, which was the first mainstream syndicated comic strip with a black woman as a lead character. So it was like a major big deal. Got it in tons of newspapers all across the states, and like, he was the guy who did that. Like, so he really has a very storied past, but it's really hard to find stuff about him because he was almost always writing under another name. So like, you'd find one of his names and go, oh, I should also look up, you know, Hunter Adams, that was him, and Sarah Gordon, that was him, and Victor Appleton II. And so you got to find all these other names, and then that will lead you into these little holes of bizarre varieties of stuff that he would do. And it's so neat that he had a whole career that he was totally willing to say, like, I'm just like a hired gun. You bring me in, I'll write whatever you want under whatever name you want. Mm-hmm. And like, that's what he did for Infocom. They brought him and said, I want you to write basically a Tom Swift story. And he said, sure, no problem. I think one of the to the detriment of this game, and Stu, what's his name, was talking about this in an interview. Stu, you become Stu, what's his name? that Jim Lawrence, because he had written literally hundreds of things, especially kids' stuff, he's very used to it, and he was kind of a one-draft writer. So he would just write his characters into difficult situations and get them out of it. But his things kind of always read like a first draft, and this game plays like a first draft. I'm going to talk later about major issues I have with the ending, for instance, which I think are just like draft. They took a whole year to make this game, and yet it feels like a draft game.
Really?
Yeah.
Because I felt like they rushed this out, like maybe get it out for Christmas or something, because this feels like a rush job.
I completely agree. And while they brought in a fellow to be like the plot person, I think they brought in somebody who just does, hey, let's just make it up as we go. It'll all sort out later. But that's how the game feels. It feels remarkably unpolished from a game's, not like the parser, not the technical standpoint, but the, like, what's going on in the game, the story of it. Compared to the three games we've already played, this feels like a draft. This feels subpar in writing compared to what we've experienced so far of Infocom. It doesn't feel like it's up to the Infocom standard.
No, I agree. But I disagree, because I also believe it's not quite up to the mark that we're used to in terms of parser, in terms of programming quality. I have some specific issues that I can bring up.
Can we talk about them pre or post? Is it after the fence?
Pre, I think.
Okay. Oh, but you know, before we go on, I want to talk about something that I think since show one has been in our show notes, but we keep forgetting to bring it up. And it's got to do with the Apple II disk images.
Right. Yes, I will mention that now because actually I used one of these images to play the game on the Apple II. Friend of the show, 4AM, has created some versions of the Infocom disk images for the Apple II, hacked, kind of upgraded from their original versions to support interpreter M and support 80 columns and lowercase. So some of the games might not have originally supported that or might not have had the best version of the interpreter. So 4AM, he or she tweaked the moved the files into the better version and whatever. So they're up on Asimov, which is a busy Apple II FTP site, and they're all there in a directory. There'll be a link to that in the show notes. But basically, he said or she said, look for the file names like Wishbringer underscore R69-85, a bunch of numbers .dsk that include the revision number and the date. Those are the enhanced version that 4AM created just for you, listener.
Interpreter M is a great, like, that's like a James Bond character. That sounds awesome. I am Interpreter M. And amazing stuff. And so we'll link to that in the show notes. We can link directly to the Infocom directory up on Asimov. So fans of the old school way of playing these, particularly if you're fans of the Apple II, you can grab these. They are free and freely available. Probably breaching copyright, but I don't care. And so we will link to those.
Copyright infringement is your best entertainment value.
It's my brand. So I think also, I guess one last thought about sort of the writing, and then we can get into the particulars. We should, as we were chastised from listeners never really talking about what a game is about, we should probably do that eventually.
Probably.
But they wanted to make a Tom Swift-type story, and I think, like, if you're bringing in this James Lawrence, like, what he did was, you know, you'd give him a known property, Hardy Boys or Nancy Drew or whatever, and he would be able to knock out that kind of story.
Yeah.
But people come to those because it's that known property. And while they want to pay for Tom Swift and they decided, well, that's too expensive, we're not going to do that, I think they should have, I think it was a major misstep to say, hey, why don't you type in your name and we'll make it a story about you. They should have invented a Tom Swift character. They should have just come up with, like, Janet Adventure, and this is the first of the Janet Adventure stories that different people could write, and you know, give it a shot. Like, because it could have been, like, maybe a series of games or something, and then you end up with a property that people are looking forward to that you can then later do other sorts of games or sell mugs or what have you. I think it showed in Infocom a complete misunderstanding of the value of a Jim Lawrence type writer, and I think they used him wrong, and that was a mistake.
No, I don't think they should have, in retrospect, used him at all. They should they should have gone with an Infocom writer who could. I mean, I've read a lot. I have children. I have a 9-year-old now, and I have a person who used to be 9, and which is kind of in the butter zone of where they were marketing, you know, from like 9 to 12.
Is that a phrase?
Butter zone it is now. Yeah. I've read some great children's literature. Just because a story is for a child doesn't mean it needs to suck. And this reads like it was written by someone who just doesn't care or has never met a child. So, I mean, it's the kind of writing where they substitute using a lot of exclamation points for actually writing something interesting. It's the kind of writing where they can say, and I copied and pasted this directly from the game, "That'll take care of you, my little double crosser," with an exclamation point.
I totally know the scene that that's from.
It's no good. Let's talk about the box. Let's talk about what actually this game is.
Yes, now that we've got people really excited about it, let's tell them what this game is about, those who are still listening.
Right. The game is Sea Stalker. The subtitle is Dive Deep into Danger. The cover art is beautiful. It's colorful. It's someone, a couple of hands manning the controls of probably a submarine. And through the portal, the view scope or whatever of the submarine, you can see a green, slimy, tentacled, scary monster. And it's colorful and it's beautiful art. It's very cool. Says interactive fiction, Tales of Adventure, junior level. The back of the box says, there's something down there in the ocean, something terrifying, and you have to face it, because only you can save the Aquadome, the world's first undersea research station. The alarm sounds and your submarine, the Scimitar, is docked nearby. But not so fast. You haven't even tested the Scimitar in deep water, and the crew at the Aquadome may have a traitor in its ranks. So be careful. You may have many possibilities to consider, mysteries to unravel, and life and death decisions to make! Exclamation point. Success won't come easily. It may not come at all, because if you challenge the deep without using all your wits, you might just wind up as shark bait! Exclamation point. Says, best introduction to interactive fiction, junior level, written for everyone ages 9 and up.
I am in that range.
Yes, you're the in the up, for sure.
I am in the up. in the distance, far in the distance, you can see me at the edge of up.
And stuff it came with, a sticker or placard or something with a whale on it. It says the Discovery Squad Deep Dive. Dive deep, dive far. There's a couple of maps, which I enjoyed. One of like the sea floor and one of the Aquadome itself. I liked that there were the maps. There's a letter from the President of the United States congratulating you on your election to the Discovery Squad.
I like how the letter's signed.
It's signed, the President.
The actual name is the President. Mm-hmm. That's the signature.
Yeah.
It's the best.
And there's a submariner's progress log, kind of a logbook page.
I don't even know what you would use that for.
Yeah,
even in the game, I don't know how that would be used.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, it doesn't make sense. The columns on it are date, wind speed, saved place, score, and remarks. So maybe you could remember that. Okay, save block one is I was doing this and that in the game, but. That for save place, but wind speed, I don't know. And the kind of the most interesting feely is these info cards, which was kind of a secret decoder thing where they hid, there was text on these cards, and then you could read the hidden text by sliding the cards into behind a red plastic sheet, a piece of plastic. I said that, a plastic sheet. And you slide the card in, and then it would reveal the hidden text with clues and bits of information from the game kind of hidden on these cards, which is kind of neat, kind of a neat spy Tom Swifty sort of thing.
I dig it as well. I'm a sucker for a secret decoder stuff.
Yeah, it's a secret decoder card. That's exactly what it is. So, yep, that's what it came with. And
what it left with was your hopes and dreams.
Yeah, yes, indeed.
Well, I have a bit of box trivia about it.
Tell me. Because,
you know, with a game where we have very little time to prepare, you know, you got to do a deep dive into what can I talk about? So the Infocom logo on the spine of the boxes, the gray boxes, mm-hmm. was, and brace yourself for some fascinating information here. The Infocom logo was normally printed between the 5th and the 10th stripe, mm-hmm. but in Sea Stalker and the early editions of Enchanter, it was actually printed between the 6th and the 11th stripe.
Wow. That must That must just drive people nuts. The guys who have all the Infocom games in a row on their bookshelf lined up neatly, and there's just these two that are just not right.
You say that, but it would drive me nuts. I hate it when you're reading a series of books and you'll get like five books in, and then for the sixth book they decide to change like the cover colors and things, or move the logos around, or let's print it the other way. That stuff drives me crazy. I don't even collect stuff, but it still drives me crazy.
Let's see. What else? What else? The game. Let's talk about the stats for the game.
Oh, yeah. Using your neat stats spreadsheet.
Yes, the spreadsheet, which is... let's see. The number of rooms on this game was 30, keeping in mind the average Infocom game has 81 rooms. The vocabulary on this game was 911 words, a little bit less than the average of 976. And the number of objects in this game is the fewest of any Infocom game, with only 15 objects, average being 44.
I have a problem with some of the objects, too. But I would argue it has more than 30 rooms.
Do you object? You object to the objects?
I do object to the objects. I suspect the suspects.
Why do you think it has more than 30 rooms?
Because, I mean, I guess it would technically have 30 rooms, but I suspect, that could be a word, that one of those rooms is the ocean. And you move around inside there. So it gives you the feeling of a much larger space, because you get to navigate the scimitar, which is your experimental, untested, what do you call it, underwater thing? A submarine, that's
submarine.
An underwater car.
A duck.
You get to drive your little, you and your very aptly named Tip, who's your assistant, who does indeed give you tips. Mm-hmm. You float around and drive around in your submarine, and you have to navigate it using sonar. And so that becomes, while it might be one location, you spend a bunch of times moving around in that location. So, like, the ocean part itself probably has hundreds of points you could be in.
Right.
So in that sense, it's got a ton of rooms, even though it's just really the one submarine room moving around.
Okay.
That's a neat part of the game. Like, that's one part of the game that I quite liked. The using the sonar and the depth finder, and it brings up a little ASCII display, like a little readout, and then you can see your location, so including the obstacles like around you, and if there's ships above, you have to dive below those. And so that's kind of neat. And the display is sort of like it's like a NetHack or like the old Star Trek games.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, that's what I thought of, like, part of this game. Yeah, I thought of like the Star Trek. That's what I thought of with it. This little map, Hunt the Wump, is sort of Star Trek-y sort of grid on the screen, and you could move around, which is very un-Infocom-like, really.
Yes, maybe that's why it took so long to make this. They had to squeeze that in. I don't know enough about the Infocom games, because we haven't played enough of them yet, whether that thing gets reused or if it's unique to Sea Stalker, because it's very different than anything we've encountered so far.
That's true. Yeah. And well, we haven't even played Encounter.
Oh, my goodness. So this has, I think, it's got 30 rooms, but it's got the maximum gosh golly gee willikers moments.
Absolutely. It has more exclamation points than all of the other games combined.
That's the sort of feel to this. It is a gee willikers, like, you, because you play essentially a kid, but you're a kid who has invented a submarine, is a master scientist, the president can't wait to meet you, and you invented this aquadome. And also, everybody else in the world, even brilliant scientists, just kind of stand around and hope you'll solve all their problems. Even if the air is running out, they'll just go, we'll just stand here and die unless you solve our problem.
I don't feel like that's what happened. That's one of my problems with this game, was that I felt like it was going to herd you along whether or not you were ready. Whether or maybe you could figure it out yourself, but you know what? If you weren't doing it fast enough or along the timeline or whatever, it was going to shepherd you along.
Well, I guess that's true. Characters do show up and say, hey, are you ready to do this? Or I've got can I meet with you? I found a new piece of information.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
Because I looked at when I was done, I looked at some walkthroughs and see how people, other people did things. And some of the walkthroughs were saying things like, you can get this part from here and then go install it on this other thing. But in my case, it was literally a character would walk up to me and said, I have an idea. Do you think we should do this? You type yes. You get 5 points. Okay, I will go. I'll go do that for you. Okay, yes. You get a point. And then he runs off, or she, or whatever, and does that thing they said they're going to do. And then literally the next move, another character would say, I have an idea. We should install this on the doohickey to do the wangle. Do you think that's a good idea? You type yes. You get 5 points. And that, there was no... Gee, it was so... I thought it was so un-Infocom-like. It was so... It was like spoon-feeding the puzzles to you. Like, literally, like, this is how you solve an Infocom puzzle. You tell someone else to go do it, you know? Didn't like it.
Yes, that kind of thing. And I do agree. There's this whole section in the middle there where... all these other non-player characters do keep coming up to you with suggestions. How about I do this? And then they go off and do it. And in all of those cases, it would have been better if there were just these objects and then you would go do yourself. I think they were trying to, we can't talk about it until we hop the spoiler fence, they were trying to introduce a particular plot point by doing that, that I don't think was that successful, or at least it wasn't for me. But yeah, okay, I take your point, and I think it is a very valid criticism. I wasn't a fan of the writing of this, as much as I've become a fan of this weird writer. I think that it's not a well-crafted story. And not well-implemented. Like, it just, not at all. It's the first one that we've played so far that I wouldn't really recommend other people to play. I mean, unless you're a completionist, but I suspect that the rest of them will be better than this, but I'm not as down as you are. I still kind of liked it because it's such a small, I think I would feel very differently if I had just committed 40 hours to this game, but Sure. Wow, you can knock this thing out very quickly.
That's true.
I did go through it basically twice and I still did it in one sitting.
Yeah.
But maybe that's just because we've gotten so amazing at these games.
That's true. Remember, we thought, are we going to get better at these games? Yes. Yes, we are. I did this game without cheating.
Did this game without cheating, too. And while you just now said you did that game without cheating, I went and completed Hitchhikers. I'm that good.
Wow. You are good. Nice.
Wait, no, I'm back to cheating again.
Cheating and lying now.
Yes, I'm doing both of those things. So... I want to hop the spoiler fence because I'd like to talk about some specific things in the plot. But before we do, I've already said that I don't necessarily think I'd actually recommend this game to people. And I recommend it on Twitter. I'm like, hey, we're going to play this one. It's supposed to be a good introduction one. If you've never played an Infocom one, it's the perfect jump on board. Why don't you come? I'm sorry if I've spoiled Infocom games for a lot of people. They're not all like this, I promise. So what about you? What would you recommend others play this game?
No. In fact, before we go over this fence, I think I can talk about this next thing pre-spoiler fence.
Ooh, okay.
I made a list of 5 things I hated about the game and then 5 things I liked about this game.
Ah, nice.
And I'm just going to go over this list and discuss it now. Number one was, as I said before, the writing style, the use of exclamation points, the golly gee willikers. This is not children's literature. This is not an interesting way to write for children. But beyond that, beyond just the writing style, the number of times this game told me there is nothing special about the whatever, or you can't do anything useful with that, really pissed me off. I mean, it is, as a Infocom person, you learn to examine everything, look around you, and I realize there's only whatever 4 objects or whatever in this game, but every time you look at the thing, there's nothing special about the moon, or you can't do anything useful with it. I thought that was lazy and sloppy on Infocom's part and didn't like it. Number two is it spoon feeds you everything, all the interesting parts of the game, but not all the interesting parts, but a lot of the parts that really move the plot along turn into someone talking to you and you get to say yes or no, and if you say no, you've screwed it up, and you don't get the points. And if you say yes, you the plot moves forward. So all the interesting bits are reduced to YN responses. Number three was that the game was buggy. One of the bugs I can't talk about now, but another one of the bugs, I typed set throttle to 2, and it says, please use units with numbers. I was just like, what? 2 is a number, right? Another time, my score went up 5 points twice in a row in the same move. You want to do something? I type yes. Your score went up 5 points. And then some dialogue happened, and then your score went up 5 points. And indeed, my score really did go up 10 points.
Now, did you finish with over 100?
No, I finished with... how did I finish? I finished with 96 out of 100 in 466 turns.
One of my notes says I don't think it's possible to finish with less than 100.
I don't know.
I am wrong.
I think
beat
I
beat the game.
Yeah, maybe. I didn't care why I didn't get 100. I was just like, I was so ready to move on. I think I know why I didn't get 5 points, but that doesn't make sense because I would have ended up with 95. So no, so I couldn't. I don't understand the score discrepancy. There was another thing that happened where I didn't notice that something was missing. There's a part in the game that is supposed to be in a place, and your character is supposed to look for it and notice that it's not there, right? But I literally hadn't noticed it was missing yet. My character hadn't looked there yet. And yet it was referenced that I knew it was missing, which was just very un-Infocom-like. Normally, they don't present a bit of information until you're ready for it. And yet this game was just like, well, you know that the blah, blah, blah is missing. I'm just like, what are you talking about? I hadn't even realized it yet. So I just thought it was sloppy. And at one point, a character gave me an item that I already was carrying.
Oh.
Tip handed me the universal tool to help me out with something. I already had the universal tool, having taken it a long time ago away from Tip. So that was sloppy. And also there was a typo at that point. He called it the universal tools instead of the universal tool. So that was insult to injury. Number four, things that I hate, is the ending is terrible. I suppose we'll talk about that post-spoiler fence. And the number five thing that I hate about this was the vocabulary. I started tabulating, making a list of every time it said, I don't know the word. I don't know the word again. I don't know the word undo. I don't know the word astern. I don't know the word mic for microphone. I don't know the word all, as in take all. I don't know increase throttle. I said turn up the throttle. It said that's silly. I said speed up. It said I don't understand. I said members, as in crew members. It didn't know what I was talking about. I said ascend instead of up. It didn't know what I was talking about. It felt, I know what this has an average vocabulary for an Infocom game, but I felt like it had no vocabulary. So five
and
things.
It's always
that
super frustrating when you're in the guess the word mode.
I'd expect out of a Scott Adams adventure or something. That's not something you expect in Infocom game.
Not one that's not super early. Like this isn't a crazy early Infocom game,
right?
Although I didn't encounter those kind of problems that much. I guess I just was in the Jim Lawrence mindset. I generally it would know the words I want. I don't remember a time when I was frustrated like using something and then had to hunt for the synonym.
Things that I liked about the game. Number one is it's short and it's over quickly.
Have we written all the compliments on the back of your hand?
Number two is I didn't have to map it because all the maps are in the feelies and
yeah, that was kind of neat, I thought. Like, you're actually given the maps to this game. I think I prefer to do mapping, other than when it's those twisty passages, like I hate to map a maze. But part of the fun of a game is either keeping the map in my head and making a mental model, or actually mapping it on paper. I actually kind of like doing that. And in this game, that's something worth mentioning. You don't have to map. Like, every location is given to you in, other than the ocean, which you have to navigate, but you get sonar, so it maps that on screen. But the actual, all 30 of the 30 locations are just given to you in the feelies. Mm-hmm. Not the browsy. Oh, no, I guess it'd be part of the browsy.
The browsy.
I'm throwing up my new vocabulary. Okay, so that's two things you liked. Short
yes.
was one of them.
Short, and didn't have to map it. The third thing I liked was actually not in the game itself. It was in the InvisiClues, which I read after I finished the game. In the InvisiClues, the way it originally worked was there was a pen, and you could, like, read the question, and then there was a invisible ink revealing pen, and you could use that over the paper to reveal an answer. And sometimes they put in things that are questions that are red herrings that have nothing to do with the game at all, just to keep you from trying to figure out too much about the game without actually playing it, which is cute. I like that.
Yes, I like that too. They'll say, like, there'll be one like, how do I light the ladder on fire? And then when you get to the fifth one of those, because there is no ladder, stop trying to cheat by reading.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah, yes.
I like that they would do that.
Yes. So one of the InvisiClues for this was there was some sort of red herring question, like, how do I light the ladder on fire? And for like the last answer was just like, you are cheating. You shouldn't be looking at this. You should be punished. Go tell your parents to buy you the game Suspended and don't feed you until you finish it.
What? Okay, that's kind of funny, but harsh.
I think so, because Suspended is supposed to be one of the hardest games. So, yeah.
In the game, I tried to play something. I said play something. And the response in game was, speaking of playing, you ought to try Infocom's other games.
Nice. The fourth and fifth things that I like about this game, I didn't write down. I guess I ran out of things. I couldn't come up with five things.
Oh, is that where we're going with this? I liked more than five. I didn't make a list. But I completely take your point about the writing. And I do agree. It is not like good literature, including it is not good children's literature. But I love old-time radio. I love adventure stories like from the 1930s and 40s. And this, I think Jim Lawrence was a guy who wrote children's lit in the 40s and then never stopped writing children's lit in the 40s. Mm-hmm. And so this is written in that kind of style, including, I think, some not... Well, you can play either gender. I don't think he writes for either gender, and I think it's gender biased. And I think I kept noticing things where I'm like, well, that wouldn't work if my character's supposed to be female. And I think just Jim has some blind spots to that.
What did you notice that was gender biased? Because
there's a few things, like it would describe the other people. And the nice thing is, like, there's Commander Bly, so there's person in charge is a female. Mm-hmm. But when they describe other people, like, they'll describe one of the scientists is being like, brilliant and gruff, and they'll describe her as being totally beautiful, but then once you get to know her, you realize like how sharp she is. I'm like, what? Right. Why are we starting with that?
Yeah.
So just things like that in descriptions and things where I'm like, I like the fact that the commander was Commander Bly, but I was, why are we what? Mm-hmm. So a few things like that would kind of stand out, which I think I probably wouldn't even have noticed in the 80s, but I am a better person now. Or I'm going to keep telling myself that. But I'm a fan of like old-time radio, and including old-time radio for kids, and they eat my Wheaties and be like the all-American boy. And so if you dig that kind of thing, you might find a little bit more to like in this game. Although I, too, am on the side of this isn't a good first game and shouldn't be anybody's introduction to Infocom, because I'm worried it would make them not want to play more of them.
Yeah, yeah. I want to point out that now we've been recording this episode for about 40 minutes, which is longer than it took to actually finish the game.
It took me more than 40 minutes, to be honest. I think it took me more than 40 minutes till I got to the point where it crashed on me and I had to start again. Yeah. I invested, I think, like, it took me like a 2.5 hours, I think, total.
Yeah, I probably played in 2 2-hour blocks, but
yeah,
still, so it wasn't
took a while.
Wasn't the kind of time I expect from my Infocom dollar.
Right. Okay. So we've talked about the game. Mm-hmm. I'd like to hop the spoiler fence and start talking about specifics. So if you have not played this game and are eager to, for some reason,
don't play this game. Don't play this game.
Stop listening now, and then you can always come back and play later. If you end up being a big fan of Infocom, which I still am, I suspect completionists are going to want to play all the games. You wouldn't run out of them and only have this left and go, well, I won't bother. So right. Everybody's eventually going to play this game.
Kevin said it was bad,
to
so
save
I'm not
your last
gonna,
one.
Yeah,
don't save it for your last one, though. Play it earlier, and then
no, it'll leave
a good one.
Bad taste in your mouth that you just won't be able to get out. Yeah,
this shouldn't be the Infocom dessert. okay, so this is now we are hopping the spoiler fence. From this point on, you better have played the game or we're going to ruin things for you. So there. Mm-hmm. So there. Okay, one big thing that bothered me is that objects are not visible, even if they're supposed to be in plain sight, until you interact with them or are told about them or something.
Yes.
Like, you go in a closet knowing the bazooka should be there, and it's like, no. You try to, nope. If you take it, it'll give it to you, but it won't describe what's in the room, and it often doesn't describe where the exits are either, which maybe is okay because you have a map,
right.
But it bothered me that it wouldn't tell you like where directions of doors were, but mostly it bugged me you'd go in a room and things just wouldn't be described.
Yes, here's
that
the thing.
Annoying.
Oh, I didn't realize it was so pervasive, but it got me early on in the game where you need to take a catalyst capsule and put it in the reactor to get the reactor started. The location of the reactor is not mentioned. It's not mentioned. It's right there in the submarine. It's
mentioned in the descriptions, I think. In the submarine.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm thinking of the air thingy. You mean the one that's down in the crawl space of the submarine?
Yes. Yeah.
Yes.
I spent 15 minutes walking around the facility trying to find where this reactor thing was. And apparently it's in a crawl space, which I never went into, although I saw it mentioned in the in some of the walkthroughs later. I just put capsule in reactor, and it was like, okay.
Oh, interesting. I had to go into the crawl space because I didn't notice that the submarine had been tampered with, and so I put the throttle up to high, and then it overheated. And to fix it, I had to go into the crawl space to reset something. And you have to. And the neat thing is you have to say carefully, because it says in the description, in the manual, rather, that you have to be careful when you're down there or you can break things because it's such a tight space. And the first time I was playing, I went down there and I ended up breaking stuff because you actually have to use the word carefully. So you have to say carefully enter the crawl space, carefully repair the reactor or something. And then so I thought that was kind of neat.
Huh. No, I didn't have to do that at all. And when my thing started to overheat, I just turned down the speed of the thing from high to low.
Turned down for what?
The throttle.
I'm just making like newfangled jokes.
I just turned down the throttle to low, and I figured it was an overheating issue, and that solved my problem.
I was worried because I was feeling the time pressure because we're supposed to get to the place where the monster was attacking. That monster is underused.
Yes.
I was disappointed at the end. I wanted to talk eventually about the end. Okay, another thing I thought was kind of neat, which surprised me, and then I thought I had done something wrong, and I restored, and then eventually realized it must just be a thing that happens, is your score goes down by 3 points. You get 3 points quickly, and then you lose them very quickly.
Yes.
And I kept thinking, as a person who's played these games before, I kept thinking, well, I've done something wrong. I'm going to want to finish with maximum points, so I'll restart again. So I restarted a few times until I realized, or rather just accepted, you must always lose these 3 points. And you do. There is no way to not lose the 3 points.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting. I'm not sure if I liked it or not, but it was definitely a new sort of... Because normally, when you do something right, you get points. So losing points would imply you've done something wrong.
Mm-hmm.
When in fact you haven't. It's just a setback that occurs in the game every time for every player.
And maybe if this is supposed to be your first Infocom game, you wouldn't think, oh, therefore I've... I don't know. If I was playing any game, I think, and I lose points, I think I've screwed up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hmm.
Another one of the bugs that bothered me, this was close to the end of the game, where you get back in the submarine and you're looking for the monster. And I couldn't find the monster. And I was getting frustrated with it. I had to restart the game maybe 20 times. Because I would get in the submarine and I would head off in a direction to look for the monster. and the monster wouldn't be there. And I would just like go in circles around the dome, you know, just looking for this thing, and it wasn't there. But the minute I got whatever it was, say 20 pixels, grid squares away from the dome off the screen, they would say, the monster's attacked us, we're all dead. And I'm just like, but the monster wasn't there. And I found, it's like, there's no monster, and I checked, you know, all different depth levels and stuff. There's no monster, and as soon as I blink, the monsters kill them all. And I thought that wasn't fair. I thought it was a bug, maybe, but either it was a bug or just not fair.
Could be. I have read that the monster attacks the dome at like a particular move point, but it's not always the same point. It's like randomly chosen between move 300 and 400 when you start the game. So if you kept restoring from existing save games, you're going to always have that. And your might have been like at move 320.
Maybe.
And that's when it's going to happen.
I felt like I could keep the monster from attacking forever just by patrolling around the that's all it took to save lives was to hire a submarine to circle the dome forever. That's all it would take.
I when I left to go for the monster, I went straight for it because earlier in the game I had asked Commander Bly something about the monster, and Commander Bly had said it was last seen to the southeast or something. So I got in the sub and I just went south. And if you go like three moves southeast, you hit the monster. Like I just right away.
I missed that bit of information, which I don't remember how I eventually got it. But and then if you go to the southeast at low throttle, you don't find the monster. You've got to go at medium throttle.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So
I went at probably high throttle or something. So yeah, that is ridiculous.
Yeah. So that was part of my problem at the end of the game, or I just couldn't. I was just couldn't even get to the big ending with the monster.
There was also there's this scene like you were talking about earlier, how the characters keep saying, "Hey, I've got an idea. Why don't we do this?" And you just say yes, and then they do it. And I didn't like that part of it. But then there's the one character comes up, one of the ladies says, why don't we install something in your submarine? And so Bill and the girl go off to do that, and they install a thing, including an emergency thing under your seat. And then when the girl comes back and says, oh, we've done that. I installed everything except the one piece under the seat that was installed by Bill. I was like, that's fishy. It's like, okay.
I didn't notice that.
Like, it was so, I installed everything except the one under the seat that was totally, that was installed by Bill. Bill did the part that's under your seat. So why don't I look under the seat? Oh, look, a needle that's going to kill me.
Yeah, right.
So, super fishy.
So Bill is a bad guy in that he does that. And there's also kind of a version that I saw where a little bit earlier in the game where the whole place runs out of oxygen.
Yes.
And I don't know if this is a usual ending or whatever, but I had taken the whatever part and I had it in my hand and I hadn't installed it in time. So I'm holding it, and then the doctor runs up, and he says, I took the part away. I wanted to embarrass Dr. Bly, and now I can't find the part to fix it, and now everyone's dead, and it's my fault. So the doctor's no peach either. He tries to kill everybody. It seems like the hiring practices at this facility are, frankly, shoddy.
Yes, they are. I completely agree. Well, and then Dr. Thorpe or whatever ends up being like the super bad dude.
Right. Yeah, Dr. Thorpe.
Though it bothered me, there's the, what was his name? Sharon Kemp, who's the assistant in where you first start.
Right.
And the first time I played, I never encountered her at the beginning of the game. I guess I moved too slowly.
Nor did I.
But the second time, because I knew what I was doing, I went right down the hallway quickly to go to the circuit breaker. And then, you know, if you keep east on the hallway, you enter her office and she was still in there.
Oh.
So I guess for the first, I don't know, 10 moves, 20 moves, she's in her office packing up all the stuff. And then she takes off through a door to the outside that's in her office that you can't go through.
Hmm.
And so it's, another thing that's completely fishy, I guess everything's fishy because it's like an underwater thing now that I think of it. That's why everything's so fishy. But it's super suspicious because you talk to her and she's really evasive and you say, hey, what's going on? I don't know. I didn't do it. And she, and like super evasive. Huh. And it turns out she's like, in the end, we find out she's been playing along with Dr. Thorpe. Like in the magazine, it says how they're going to get married.
Right.
But she conks him on the head, knocks him out at the end, and that lets you avoid it, and then you can blow up the thing. And it just, I completely did not buy that she wasn't really a traitor. I'm like I don't, what was her plan here? Like she was going to wait until she was basically trapped inside this tiny sea cat with the insane doctor, mm-hmm. and then knock him on the head and hope somebody's on the outside with an underwater bazooka?
Right. Yeah.
What was her play? I really think this end is an example of Jim Lawrence's style, which is we just write ourselves into difficult spots, right. and then come up with a way to get out at the end. But the ending made no sense at all. Like
no.
the whole, it bothered me you don't really fight the monster. You just use it as a shield.
Right.
And it bothered me that Sharon was just a good guy all along that was just super fishy in your office and didn't tell anybody about anything, right. and then took off with a bunch of stuff, mm-hmm. and then knocked him out and then did nothing. I'm like,
right.
what? Completely nonsensical.
Right. Yes. And then, after, so there's this monster that's been, you know, terrorizing the dome and everyone's scared. And then after Sharon takes over the sea cat, literally last thing she says to you is like, okay, well, I'm just going to lead the monster back to its cave now. It'll be fine. What?
It's so bizarre.
Yeah, I mean, so the monster's not a threat anymore and we're just going to take it back home to its cave and... Science, yay! What?
Because it can be studied. Yeah, because you can't shoot it because then it won't basically block the doctor from blowing you out of the water. But the monster ends up being basically a red herring. Like, nothing comes of the monster.
Herring.
Oh, God. Yeah. So the ending was not a good ending. A very disappointing end. And it's so funny because in the last episode, we were talking about Trinity. I think that was the last one, right?
Yeah.
They'll run together. And the ending for that, in a game that I adored and thought was beautifully written, still left me kind of confused. And it's like, all right, I still loved it. I didn't know what other kind of ending I would want. Here's like literally the exact opposite of a game that's super short, hold your hand, is written... not at a very high level, at a very low level, super sloppy, and an ending that doesn't just leave me confused, leaves me thinking, well, that's a terrible end. How about we do a second draft?
Yeah.
Super fishy.
Fishy.
fishy. Call this one the sneaky fish.
Yeah, so I felt like we went from... one of the best Infocom games to one of the worst Infocom games. It's like a roller coaster ride of Infocom.
Hmm. It's the first one we've played of the four that I didn't think was actually a good game.
Yeah.
I mean, overall, I there was stuff about it I liked, and I do actually kind of like this kind of story, the G. Willikers story. Mm. I got a soft spot for them. Mm. But overall, this isn't a very good game. If this was entered into the IF comp, it would not come in top 20. And this is a professional Infocom game.
Right. Yeah.
If you say, look inside tip, it'll say you forgot your X-ray glasses.
Cute.
Like that, too. And I tried slapping tip. If you slap him,
yeah.
he slaps you back.
And
he says, wow, your face. Yeah, he says, wow, is your face red? Like, now that you hit me.
Oh, I tried kissing. I think I tried kissing tip, and it said, like, maybe there'll be time for that sort of thing when this adventure is over.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah.
Did you throw stuff at things and people?
No.
That's super fun. So if you got, like, say the logbook and you type throw logbook at tip, it'll say tip ducks as the logbook flies by. But if you throw something at an object, if you go like throw logbook at alarm, mm-hmm. it'll say the alarm doesn't duck as the logbook flies by. So that kind of stuff is pretty funny. Like Infocom sprinkles those kind of things in quite well.
Hmm.
So I like that bit.
Cool.
So it's got that going for it.
All right. That's nice.
So neither of us really dug this. It
no.
was too short. It was poorly written. And yeah. But maybe the next one will be better.
Maybe.
It's got to be better, right? It's got to
right.
be better.
So yeah, last time you said the two that sounded not interesting to you were this one and Border Zone, right?
And Border Zone, yes. So what have we picked for our next game?
We have picked Border Zone.
Yes, we have picked Border Zone. But, so, you finish this super quick, and then you texted me going, I want to move on to the next one. How about we do Border Zone? I'm right. Like, yeah, okay, let's go.
Yeah. So I've already started Border Zone a little bit, but...
I have not.
Okay. Well, you should.
Now, isn't Border Zone also by Stu Galley?
I don't know.
I saw an interview with him. I think part of the Get Lamp or Take Lamp, as I like to think of it now. And it was a really good interview. So I think, yeah, in fact, that was Stu Galley. He gives a great interview. So I'm actually a fan of him, even though I didn't like this game that much. So it hasn't, because of that great interview, it has not at all turned me off the idea of playing more games that are by him. So if he did do Border Zone.
Oh. Mark Blank did it.
Oh, okay. So he's one of the big ones.
Yeah, he's one of the biggest.
Not physically, but just like one of the originals, right?
Right. Not like a 60-foot high boy or something.
Right. Right. Yes.
I think Stu, Stu also did Moon Mist. I think that's the only
one. Oh, see, Moon Mist is another one of the ones. It's my go-to one that I recommend people actually start with. Hmm. I remember playing that one, and I really liked it. So we'll see. That's one I recall playing when I was younger. I really enjoyed it. So we'll see if I have the same experience when we eventually come back to that one.
Nice.
Another chance for you, Stu.
Well, with all this talk about old-time radio, I think we should have announced the next game in the style of old-time radio, you know. On the next exciting episode of Eaten by a Grew, Kevin and Carrington play Border Zone. Something like that. You know. Will Kevin and Carrington make it across the border in time? Tune in.
Into the zone? So Border Zone for the next one.
Yeah.
Apologies to our listeners who wanted to play along, and then we... put out two episodes within 20 minutes of each other.
They
feels like
plenty of time to play along. They really did.
But only if they began immediately. Some people would have only heard the episode this morning during their commute.
Right.
They've had literally no time. But you know what? Too bad.
Too bad.
Maybe we're saving you from the game. I think of it that way instead. Instead of playing this nice easy one as your introduction to Infocom, come join us for a very difficult one called Border Zone.
That's right.
I don't know if it's actually difficult, but we'll play that one next.
Okay.
So next up will be Border Zone. Mm-hmm. And we will put this one behind us.
Right. If you have any thoughts about either Border Zone or this game that we just played that I've already forgotten the name of, Sea Stalker, if you have any thoughts of Sea Stalker or Border Zone, any memories, any anything to say, let us know. You can email us at grue, that's G-R-U-E, at monsterfeet.com, not grue like a 60-foot boy would have grown. And or you can hit us up on Twitter. On Twitter, I am at Kevin Savitz, and Carrington is at Carrington. That's how you can find us on the tweets.
Indeed. And we will call you our BFF in the yearbook if you give us a nice review on iTunes so that other people can find us too. And all the show notes and stuff will be found at monsterfeet.com. And thanks to MC Frontalot for letting us use his sweet vocal science as our theme song. And we will see you in... I was going to say a month, but apparently we'll see you in like 12 hours. Thanks for podcasting with me, Kevin.
Thanks for podcasting with me, Carrington.
Talk to you soon.
Bye.
Oh, no. You have walked into the slavering fangs of a lurking Gru.
Well, shall we dive in? Oh, dive in.
Yeah, there you go.